Tan Talk Radio Network.
Here's the story of a lovely lady who was bringing up three very lovely girls. All of them had hair of gold, like their mother, the youngest one in curls.
It's the story of a man named Brady who was busy with three boys of his own. They were four men living all together, yet they were all alone.
Till the one day when the lady met this fellow, and they knew that it was much more than a hunt, that this group must somehow form a family. That's the way we all became the Brady Bunch. The Brady Bunch. The Brady Bunch. That's the way we became the Brady Bunch.
Oh, yeah. Pleasant memories of the Brady Bunch. I'm trying to remember who all of the people were. Was it Florence Henderson was the mother of the Brady Bunch? And did you watch that show, Ed, by any chance, the Brady Bunch?
I did, but that's not why I played it.
Okay.
Where have you been since about 9, 10 o'clock last night?
Where was I?
Do you know that Tom Brady
has come out
of retirement?
Oh, okay. I'm so slow on the pickup.
Brady, a man named Brady.
Yes, yes, yes. Good morning, everybody. And I apologize for Big Ed. I welcome you to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I'm Paul Molloy, and along with my excited partner, Big Ed Davis, that Tom Brady is back. We thank you for joining us. It is Monday, March the 14th here on Freedom Works. Boy, we got a lot of things going on. I guess we're going to talk with Ed about Tom Brady a little later. But in a few minutes, Bruce Klinger of the Heritage Foundation is going to be with us. We're going to talk about South Korea's new president. Yeah. Did you even know there's a new president in South Korea? And whether he will strengthen or loosen the bonds with the United States. What a perilous time we are going through right now. So stay tuned for that. And Florida Democrats come together in Broward County to lambast Governor Ron DeSantis. I mean, they really took him to the woodshed. We're going to tell you what they said and get some thoughts on this and other things with the proprietor of the Barber Poll, Andrew Ceresi, a little bit later in the show. And let me pose a question to you. If our country was attacked like Ukraine, who would be more likely to stay and fight? Would it be Democrats or Republicans? Well, there was a poll done by Quinnipiac on this. We're going to tell you what the results were. So you can stay tuned for that as well. And in our ultimate top 10, we are going to provide a service to our local listeners. We are going to give you the top 10 gas stations near our radio station with the lowest gas prices. Ed, keep your pencil out and make a note of it. All right? Top 10 gas stations with the lowest gas prices.
Well, that's going to be in about 40 minutes. So, you know, prices could change.
They could. As a matter of fact, I compiled this yesterday afternoon, so it may be one day obsolete. But we'll give you at least some stations that are competitive, all right?
Well, I've got my gas buddy right here that tells me my phone.
Well, don't tell us because...
Well, no, I'll see how accurate it is.
Well, I'm sure...
When you do yours.
Okay, that sounds good. By the way, Freedom Works, we are sponsored in part by Andrew's Master Barbershop. Guys, if you got to use your car for anything and spend all that money on gasoline, why don't you motor over to Andrew's Master Barbershop and get a great haircut, because he's got the best place for haircuts in Tampa Bay, in my humble opinion. It's over in Dunedin in the Overcash Plaza on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580 Main Street. They are not open today, however, but Tuesday through Saturday, typically 8:30 to 5 on weekdays and 8:30 to 2 on Saturdays. Call first to get your appointment, 727-733-3773. All right. So, you know, every day I wake up now, I'm afraid to turn the TV or radio on. Why? Because I don't want to hear any more bad news about what is going on in Ukraine. It has thrown a dark blanket over our lives, has it not? Certainly has over mine. And now, if we did not have enough to worry about, despite President Biden's promise not to involve troops in the Ukraine war, a miscalculation at this point from either side could risk dragging NATO into this conflict. Now, did they not just shell a base in the Ukraine, which is only about 30 miles away from Poland? And we're not about 35 people killed there? We are getting closer and closer to something going wrong at the Polish-Ukrainian border. Poland is a NATO country. And we have resolved that if one NATO country is attacked, they all are attacked. And we are then involved in a war. So that's where we are right now. The fear of a deadly escalation in this Ukraine conflict has been at the center of the Biden administration's response in recent days. Last week, the Pentagon denied a request from Ukraine to send Polish MiG-29 fighter jets into the Ukraine. Now, we're already sending them all kinds of missiles, but somehow if we send airplanes in there, that's a horse of a different color. So here is John Kirby. He is the Pentagon press secretary, and last week he had talked about the MiGs. He said the intelligence community has determined the transfer of the MiGs may be mistaken as what he calls escalatory and could result in significant Russian reaction that might increase the prospect of a military escalation with NATO. We are wandering around emasculated, apparently, in this whole conflict right now. The no-fly zone, that's another thing. We're not supposed to be able to enter Ukrainian airspace and tell them no more planes to fly through here or we will shoot you down. And so that's another situation. And all of these planes that are flying around, most of them, I guess, are Russian planes, although Ukraine has got its own planes. What if one of those comes across the border at Poland or one of the other NATO countries? I wonder what they would do then. So this is a very scary situation. Of course, we have a mediocrity in the White House. So a guy that, you know, is going to, if anything, he'll sit somewhere at a table in front of a screen and talk to people, but I don't think he could convince his own family to do anything, much less anybody else in the world. There's been this talk about sending people like Trump over there to try to negotiate with Putin. I don't think that's a bad idea. Why not try something? And now you see these pictures of these you know, the pressure, I think, on the United States and the rest of the countries in Europe to do something more than they are doing is becoming immense. I mean, when you get all of these horrible scenes and shots of innocent people being wiped away, it's hard to sit there and just go, well, you know, it's not a NATO country, so I'm sorry, you know. It's hard to do it. Because these days you go up, if Putin miscalculated anything, he miscalculated what the world reaction would be to this, I think. Because now that you can see everything right up front and close, right? With all the cameras, everybody's got a cell phone, they can videotape what's going on around them. And eventually, you know, it gets out. So that's where we are right now. It's very, 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 very scary. All right. Let us take our break. When we come back, Bruce Klinger of the Heritage Foundation is going to join us. We're going to talk about the new president of South Korea. You knew Peggy Sue, then you know why I feel blue without Peggy. My Peggy Sue. This is the Tantalk Radio Network. Guys, a well-groomed appearance is the first thing people will notice about you after a stop at the best barbershop in Tampa Bay. Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin is that very place, and they've specialized in the art of men's haircutting for decades. They're located in the Overcash Plaza, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive. Andrew's Master Barbershop, open Tuesday through Saturday. Just call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
Caregivers find the support they need on Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver. Heard every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m., Linda and her caring and knowledgeable guests will bring you education, information, and resources, as well as a shoulder for caregivers. That's Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver, where you can find help and hope every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Everybody say yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we are back.
Yeah,
thank you so very much for joining us on a Monday. It's kind of coolish in Tampa Bay. Kind of nice. Low 60s right now. We are delighted to have Bruce Klinger join us from the... He's a senior research fellow. He specializes in Korean and Japanese affairs for the Heritage Foundation, and we're going to talk with Bruce about the new president of South Korea. I believe it's pronounced Yoon Suk-yeol, but I'm not sure. Bruce, am I pronouncing the guy's name right?
Yeah, that's good enough.
Close enough? All right. So you say in your piece here that he is of the Conservative People Power Party, the three Ps, and that he will bring South Korea's foreign and security policies into even greater alignment with those of the United States. Will you tell us, expand on that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, I think it's good news that he was elected. Now, their election was bitterly contested, a lot of mudslinging. He won really by kind of a razor-thin majority, was less than 1%. And like any election, it was probably determined mostly by domestic issues, economic and social issues. But for a foreign policy, which is what we are focused on here in Washington, it's really, I think, good news. So that the current president in South Korea, who under their constitution can't run for re-election, they're limited to a single five-year term, he was progressive or left of center. And so he had a very sort of benign view of policy towards North Korea, turn the other cheek very frequently, ignore the insults and the threats and the provocations, and try to get the U.S. and the rest of the international community to offer benefits to North Korea in the hope that it'll induce them back to the negotiating table. Also, very strained relations with Japan, another critically important ally for the U.S. and Asia, and taking a back seat in confronting China over its many transgressions. The new president, Yoon, is going to be the opposite of all that. His emphasis is on strengthening the relationship and the military alliance with the U.S. and taking a much firmer, tougher view and policy towards North Korea and China, and hopefully set aside some historic or difficult historic issues with Japan in order to improve those relations and focus on the threat of this millennium rather than the threat of the last millennium.
So I did not know about the relationship being rather strained with Japan. What is going on? Why is there a straining between South Korea and Japan currently?
Well, the most obvious thing is that between 1910 and 1945, Japan occupied the Korean Peninsula, and it was very brutal, just awful.
So they have long memories.
Right. And before that, there were Japanese invasions in the 1500s, which South Koreans will point out to this day. And then there was sort of the relationship is always sort of cyclical. It has ups and downs, and there are various triggers that do it. And a couple years ago, there was, I don't want to get into details, but there was sort of a catalyst where this agreement that Tokyo and Seoul had over what's called the comfort women, that's the euphemism for women forced into sexual slavery in World War II. They sort of had an agreement, and then President Moon, the current South Korean president, undermined it, and then there were some court cases and Japan retaliated economically, and then South Korea retaliated to that. So, but we now have new leaders in both Japan and South Korea, and both are at least making noises that they do want to improve relations and sort of firewall the historic issues to allow all the countries, including the United States, working with them on the North Korean and Chinese threats, which are getting very scary.
So the new South Korean president, again, Yoon Suk-yeol, his relationship, therefore, with North Korea and presumably with China, would that become, as opposed to the current South Korean president, would that become a little bit more, a little bit more tense?
Yes, but even under the current South Korean president, the relations haven't been good. So even being very obsequious hasn't helped improve inter-Korean relations or Chinese relations. So North Korea has been very dismissive, even insulting in its threats and attitude and behavior towards the South Korean president, even though he's advocating the international community reduce sanctions, offer massive benefits. He's willing to meet with them, you know, anywhere, anytime, under any conditions. And yet North Korea just sort of flicks him off with the back of their hand.
Yeah.
So even being very subservient to them, he's even curtailed free speech in South Korea on sending balloons with anti-North Korean propaganda into the North. He's curtailed that because he wanted to improve relations. He's also not criticized North Korean human rights violations. And it didn't get him anywhere with North Korea. So I think some people will point to the new South Korean president and say, oh, anything that happens by North Korea, it's all because of the South Korean president's hardline policy. But they were doing that anyway. We've had lots of missile launches and other provocations the last several years, and that was under the Moon administration.
Yeah.
So, you know, things are going to happen, and they were going to happen anyway.
We're talking with Bruce Klinger. As you can tell, he knows something about what he speaks regarding South Korea. He specializes in Korean and Japanese affairs for the Heritage Foundation. Here is this philosophy, and I think it's going on maybe even in the Ukraine crisis right now, this philosophy that comes from, say, China and maybe North Korea and even Russia, that they absolutely walk over people that allow them to walk over them. They respect strength. And maybe we're not showing strength in a lot of ways, like much like perhaps South Korea did and has done up until now. Do you see that as a sense of, is there a sense of truth to that when it comes to despots like in China, North Korea, and Russia?
Right. China has been, up until recently, a little more subtle in their approach. It was sort of as they were building their economic and then their economic strength and their diplomatic influence and their military power, they sort of kept their attitude under wraps a bit. As they became much stronger economically and militarily, then they started throwing their weight around. So in the South China Sea, they have claims of territory that the smaller Southeast Asian nations say, no, that's our territory. And China just keeps pushing and bullying everyone. And then also in the East China Sea against Japan with some islands there that China claims. And then economically, what they've done throughout the world is go to nations and say, look, either you toe the line with us or we will retaliate against you economically. Or, on the other hand, they will offer a lot of benefits to smaller nations if they do things that China would like them to do. So it's getting their foot in the door economically, either through promises of benefits or good trade relations or through threats of retaliation. So, you know, now what we see is, particularly the last several years under Chinese President Xi, that they're really being much more bombastic in their rhetoric, much more aggressive in their bullying of other nations.
So here's South Korea, this little country that is kind of surrounded by bad things. And they've managed to survive pretty much since the Korean conflict, which is, I guess, is still not officially over, right? It's still considered a truce or whatever you want to call it. Go ahead.
Yeah, we're not actually in a state of war. We're in a state of armistice. And what South Koreans, you know, North and South, there's a very common adage of they see themselves as a shrimp amongst whales. So very large China, very large Japan. And that when the whales fight, the shrimp's back is broken. So they see themselves as South Korea is a nation of about 55 million people, surrounded by much larger or much more threatening nations. And they have to be very wary. But the Korean nation has survived for 5,000 years and been invaded 1,000 times or so. So, and they're still there. So a very tenacious people, I think, like the Ukrainians, and that the fact that this small nation is still its own sovereign entity is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I think it is. Do you think that will last? I mean, the way things are going, here's China watching the Ukraine situation. They have eyes on Taiwan. I mean, why not? If they're going to go after Taiwan, do you think maybe South Korea would also be within their radar?
No, China wouldn't try to go after South Korea except sort of economically and retaliatory way, as they've done in recent years. It's North Korea that would do something against South Korea. And so as long as South Korea has a very strong military, as it does, and has a very strong military alliance and mutual defense treaty with the U.S., that is what has deterred North Korea from going beyond the actions that it has. So that's something that in the U.S. we see as very important, is our military alliances with both Japan and South Korea. It keeps the neighborhood calm, which is in our interests diplomatically, economically, strategically, et cetera. So, you know, it's up to the U.S. to maintain not only our forces overseas, but also the extended deterrence guarantee so that both our friends and foes know very well that we will retaliate if anyone messes with our allies.
We're talking with Bruce Klinger, senior research fellow who specializes in Korean affairs at the Heritage Foundation. You know, the South Koreans may be watching what the United States is doing or not doing regarding the Ukraine crisis. I wonder if they would say to themselves, gee, I hope that their word, meaning the United States, their word is good if something happened here. You know, maybe North Korea is watching this too and going, you know, maybe we should take a gamble. You know what I mean?
Right. So, you know, with allies, they're always nervous because they're relying for part of their security on another nation, not only the military equipment, but also the commitment. And so the military equipment is pretty, you know, tangible. It's the commitment, which is always a little amorphous. You never really know if your ally is going to do what you want them to do. So, you know, there's always a fear of abandonment by any ally. And so that feeling goes up and down, and it's sort of they always have to constantly be reassured that you will be there. And that's by having our troops there, having our equipment updated and military exercises and the rhetorical commitment and frequent meetings. So, mm-hmm. You know, but they're always going to be nervous. And in recent years, as North Korea has developed the ability to hit the United States with nuclear weapons, then they wonder, would you really trade San Francisco for Seoul? And my response to them has been, well, during the Cold War, we were willing to, in essence, risk San Francisco, Washington, and New York for London, Paris, and Bonn. So, you know, we are there, but, you know, no matter how often you reassure them, an ally is always going to be nervous to some degree.
How many U.S. forces are over there right now in Korea?
We have 28,500, and that's part of a presidential commitment through successive administrations.
Okay. So the fact that we have that many there is kind of, I would think, reassuring to the South
right.
Koreans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's air forces and naval forces and a part of a army brigade and then a little bit of a small marine contingent. But we're committed to have hundreds of thousands of troops go there if there is a full-scale war. And the Marines down in Okinawa would be a very large maneuver unit, et cetera. And then the 54,000 or so troops that we have in Japan would also be committed to defending Korea, as well as from the United States and Hawaii, et cetera.
Now, the new president, Yoon Suk-yeol, just barely won over his opponent. Very hard-fought, close thing. Economically, what part did economics play in the decision to elect this guy, if any?
Very much. And most elections, I think, voters kind of vote their pocketbooks. And so South Korea, even though it's a very small nation, it's about the 10th largest economy in the world. So they punch above their weight in many categories, including economically. Like other nations, they've been having economic problems lately, and then certainly because of COVID and lockdown and impacts on trade. So, they see that, but also very much there's a sense of economic disparity, that there's a divergence between the haves and the have-nots. And then also gender issues fell into that, where, that seeing that one view is that women are disadvantaged in this sort of predominantly Confucian society. Others saw it as young males are being disadvantaged as compensation. So there's a lot of mudslinging back and forth on that. So it got pretty nasty, this campaign. And there, as you pointed out, it's just, a razor-thin majority, very not only divided, but very polarized society. And what it seems like in talking with Koreans there, that they weren't really looking for a candidate to unite them and bring them together. It was more whoever won, they wanted that candidate to punish the other side. So it's not going to be an easy road to hoe to hoe for either candidate, and in this case, Yoon.
Well, Bruce, you certainly seem to know a lot about that peninsula, and I want to thank you so very much for coming on and talking to us about all this. I hope we can do this again down the road.
Oh, well, I look forward to it. Yeah, I've been looking at it for about 29 years, including my time at CIA, and Wow. Hopefully I picked up a thing or two.
Well, you obviously have, and we appreciate you sharing some of that with us. Thank you, Bruce.
Oh, well, thank you.
All right, sir. Bruce Klinger. Very interesting. Going to have him back for sure. All right. We are going to take our break. When we come back, Florida Democrats gathered together in Broward County to lambast Governor Ron DeSantis. We're going to tell you some of the things they said and get some ideas and thoughts from the barber pole proprietor himself, Andrew Ceraci.
We're going to rock around the clock tonight. Put your bad rides on. Join me home. We'll have some fun when the clock strikes one. We're going to rock around.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Guys, a well-groomed appearance is the first thing people will notice about you after a stop at the best barbershop in Tampa Bay. Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin is that very place, and they've specialized in the art of men's haircutting for decades. They're located in the Overcash Plaza, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive. Andrew's Master Barbershop, open Tuesday through Saturday. Just call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
Do you have trouble with communicating, or are you drowning in clutter? You are not alone. There is a solution. This is Christiana, your clarity coach. I can help you find the clarity you need, and it's easier than you think. Whether it's your communication, your mind, or your disorganized physical space, join me Wednesdays at 5 p.m. for Clarity Corner with Christiana, and let's do this together. Remember, that's Wednesdays at 5 p.m. on Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Well, all I want is party down. Come along with me when I'm feeling wild. To be ever-loving, true and fair. To run her fingers through my hair. Come.
Hey, we are back on a Monday. Nice day out, by the way. Sunny and brisk. I like that. I almost forgot, Ed, to set my clock ahead. In fact, I woke up yesterday, and I hadn't realized it was daylight savings time. But I have a clock that I can see when I wake up from the bedroom that actually has one of those automatic, it automatically shifts the daylight savings.
Right. Well, I mean, it's nice. It was a weekend of, we had some rain, a lot of wind.
We did,
wasn't quite enough to knock the pollen completely out, which I'm still paying for today.
Yeah, that's right. Pollen. You've had just a little bit of a pollen attack. I've noted, but you seem to look better. You don't seem to have the
water. It's still bad today. That's why I got a hat on.
Speaking about power, 4+ hours out on Saturday from about 11:30 to almost 3 o'clock, where I live.
Did you pay your bill?
Well, what difference does that make? No, the whole group, the whole area went out, and I thought, 4 hours, what's going on? And you apparently it was broken, some little tree limb.
That's the first thing you ask, though, right? Did we pay the bill?
No, I never thought of that. I thought, the first thing I think of is it just my place?
Yeah.
You know? Is it just my place?
Well, usually,
and when I see that nobody else has any power, then I feel better.
Or everybody's outside looking around.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So I go to my next door neighbor, and we started chatting about all of it. And fortunately, it was cool enough Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
We didn't have, fortunately, too hot a day. Anyway. So I want to talk a little bit about Governor Ron DeSantis really got lambasted. Charlie Crist, Nikki Fried, and Annette Taddeo came together over the weekend, and they had some going on at the Broward County Democratic Party's annual Obama Roosevelt Legacy Gala. Try to get that on one sign.
Yeah, Obama's a big gala, isn't he?
Yes. Anyway, so intense is the dislike for DeSantis that he apparently displaced Donald Trump as the Democrats' biggest villain. So we've got both of the Ceresi brothers here. I got to go with Andrew first because, you know. So Andrew, they were really going, these three, unholy three, were really going after Ron DeSantis. I guess you would expect that. But do you think it's going to make any difference in November?
Well, that just goes to show the desperation that the Democrats are having, knowing they're going to lose their rear end in the midterms. Nikki Refried Bean is 28 points behind Ron
Refried Bean.
And Charlie Flip-Flop there, he's 24 points behind Ron DeSantis. Now, what do you think Ron has to be afraid of?
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing, Paul. These people are doing nothing but desperation moves because they know they don't stand a chance. These people are so, let me tell you something, they're more afraid of Ron DeSantis than they are Donald Trump.
I think they might be. Refried Bean is currently the state agricultural commissioner. Did you know that?
Of course I know that.
So maybe she knows a thing or two about beans, now that I think about it.
From what I understand, the agriculture department isn't being run too great either these days. Because you're wondering.
I know. We have your smarter and older brother on the line here, too. He's up in New York. And, Angelo, I know you don't know a lot about what's going on here in Florida, but are they having some sort of a gubernatorial race in November up there, too?
Yes, they are. And Andrew Cuomo's looking to do a comeback, believe it or not.
No!
Yes.
Does he actually think he has a chance?
Yes, he's actually thinking about coming back, running for governor again.
Oh, my God. That's like, we got Charlie Crist. You know, he can't get over the fact that he's no longer the governor. Wow. Okay, so, now that's a surprise. I didn't think Cuomo was that, I don't know, I was going to say foolhardy after all the things that have gone on. But then we got Charlie Crist with all the things that went on with him. He's foolhardy enough, right, Andrew, to think he has a chance.
You know, Paul, I think it's going to be great with the midterms coming up because, you know, we had some people running in District 13 that I didn't think really stood a chance.
That's Charlie Crist's, Charlie Crist's territory.
That's right. And now, you know, I'm backing Kevin Hassel all the way. This is one Republican that I stand behind very, very firmly. I'm backing him 100%. And I just can't wait to see Ron DeSantis and Kevin Haslett tag-teaming Charlie Crist, because Kevin's going to be going for Charlie's seat.
That's true.
And Charlie's trying to go for the governor's seat. I mean, these guys are going to tag-team him like you've never seen. I'm quite sure Kevin is going to bring out every flaws that has happened in District 13. okay, which is a big part of St. Petersburg. It has all kinds of flaws going on. I think if able to tag team this guy, he doesn't know what he's in for.
Yeah, we had Kevin, as you know, Kevin Haslett on about a week or so ago, and he's very glib. He's a long-time Clearwater area native. He's got that going for him. You know, he speaks very well, and I think he makes a great impression. I think there's a very good chance. But again, you got St. Petersburg itself, which is, you know, let's be honest, it's bluish.
Paul, the thing that's going on now is this redistricting, Paul. And if the redistricting goes the way that it does, I'm going to be part of District 13, and half of St. Pete is going to be gone.
Oh, Dave, there's a possibility that, is this the Republicans doing this? It's probably mostly Republicans redrawing.
You know, they have to redistrict after so many years,
yes,
Paul, because of the population.
Yeah, and Republicans control the legislature, so they will have the major say in the way the district is shaped.
Yeah, and I guess they already got it redrawn, and they're just waiting for the governor to sign it. To be
okay
with you.
So they're gonna
a real treat.
They're gonna slice a portion of St. Petersburg out of District 13. Do you think?
Right. Right, and they're going to drag 13 over to where I live up to Curlew Road.
Well, you know that will be challenged in court then.
No, they can challenge it all they want, but we'll see what happens, you know.
Especially when
the Democrats are desperate right now, Paul. Desperate as can be.
Okay, and Angelo, do you see any chance that Cuomo can make a comeback? First of all, is there any chance that the Republican can become the governor of the state of New York again?
Well, they just did the redistricting here in New York State, and actually it's controlled by the Democrats.
Right.
So they did challenge the redistricting in court, and they lost.
Yeah.
So the governor just signed, Kathy Hochul just signed into law the new redistricting.
Now, Kathy Hochul is a Democrat, so a Democrat, obviously.
Cuomo's going to have to run a primary against her.
Oh, that'll be fun.
And they got petitions going on right now to get the candidates on the ballot for the voting, you know, the primary voting district
primary
coming in.
And you really think Cuomo is going to do it then? He's going to run? I mean, does he?
These ads out on television
saying he's going to run.
They're saying that he's found innocent. There's been five counties or seven counties that will not bring any charges against him because there's not enough evidence, all this stuff. So he's floating the idea around that he's innocent, that he was exonerated, because none of the counties or anybody's going to file charges against him.
Okay.
And he's putting it out there that he's going to run again.
Let me change topics, Angelo, and ask you very briefly. Have you changed your feelings at all about whether or not the United States should get more involved in the Ukraine crisis?
Well, I guess we're sending more aid, probably, but that's the best that we can do. You know, I mean, a lot of people I see really do not want U.S. troops, and I can understand where they're coming from, having boots on the ground. And it's more I'm disappointed that the European nations have not really stepped up more, you know.
Should we allow Polish MiGs to cross into the Ukraine?
Yeah, we should. Why not? I mean, he's bringing in troops from Syria. He's asking China for help with the war effort, right? Material and all that.
That's right.
I mean, our president, which it's too late now, you know, when Goofy there, Putin, was talking about, well, I got nuclear weapons, this and that, he should have said the same thing that President Trump said. Hey, I got bigger buttons than you got. I got more nuclear weapons. You got to stand up to these guys.
Yeah, except Russia has more nuclear weapons than the United States. That's true. They do. Let me ask Andrew something. Andrew, do you feel any different? Do you think that there should be maybe an entry into the Ukraine by, say, Polish MiGs, or maybe a no-fly zone, or what? Do you have any? Have your thoughts changed at all?
Well, I still say that all of Europe should have gone against Putin. All of Europe should have joined together and finished him off. Period.
Mm-hmm.
They're all afraid. I'm so tired of hearing World War III, World War III. Well, they're already in World War III. It already started. Look at Iran shot missiles at our consulate the other day.
Yes.
Right? Okay? It's already started. This needs to get done and over with. Instead of quit playing, all we're doing is ruining the world's economy. Okay? People being afraid to go on their daily lives. And for what? Because of one idiot? Finish the whole thing off. Mm-hmm. Get rid of them all.
Yeah. So, in other words, we go all in against Russia.
Everybody.
Uh-huh.
Everybody.
Yeah, but, I mean, not just the United States. You mean the entire European...
Right, exactly.
And throw Israel in there with their nuclear weapons?
Of course. Well, we ain't going to use no nuclear weapons. There's going to be no need for nuclear weapons. That's a bunch of crap.
So just use conventional weapons.
They're going to use conventional weapons, get rid of all his tanks, get rid of his convoy, and make the Russians run back to Russia.
Okay. So, in other words, you now say enter the Ukraine and do this.
Of course.
Okay.
I said all of Europe should have joined together a long time ago.
Okay. Yeah.
That convoy never should have been able to get as close as it did. They should have finished it.
And you don't think Putin... What about chemical and biological weapons? Do you see...
I don't think he's going to do nothing, Paul. Listen, the biological weapons are going to hit his place, too. What's coming one place is going to go to the other. But nobody's going to risk it.
What do you think?
Let me tell you. And if they do risk it, the people themselves will get rid of those leaders.
I'm hoping that is actually the case. Angelo, what about chemical and biological weapons?
I think Putin's the type of person, the character to actually do the chemical weapons and everything, yeah.
You do think he would unleash them?
He'll use it. All costs. That's what he'll do. He's desperate to take over that country and everything else.
Mm-hmm. And if he unleashes them in the Ukraine, do we go in?
If he uses chemical weapons and everything like that, that's it. Just say, hey, this is enough. Is enough.
Mm-hmm.
You can't allow a person like Putin to continue on. Somehow he's got to be taken out.
Yeah. Hopefully by his own people.
Well, you know, I think he runs that country with an iron fist.
No question.
And it's going to be very hard for those people to take him out unless somebody over there has a conscience and says, hey, that's it, pulls the trigger on him.
Yeah. Gentlemen,
do Russian people even have weapons like we do?
They've got more nuclear missiles than...
I'm talking about the people themselves, the civilians.
The civilians.
No.
I didn't think so. So how can they do anything?
It's got to be the people in his...
And that ain't going to happen. They're paid too well. They worry about themselves.
It would seem to me that there are weapons and there's a way to infiltrate and get to Putin. I think where there's a will, there's a way. And I'm sure that there are groups that are contemplating to do just that. Right now, both inside and outside Russia.
Yeah, they.
I really think so.
Right.
I mean, I think the guy's got to be taken out.
He's got to be. Taken
I agree
out.
With you.
Yeah, I think we all agree on that one, gentlemen. It's a pleasure as always. Thank you so much for being with us, and we'll be talking, of course, Andrew again on Wednesday. And Angelo, as always, thanks, my friend.
No, you're quite welcome. Thank you so much.
Okay.
And be good, guys.
All right, thanks. Thanks, guys. All right, the brothers Sorace, we're going to take our break. When we come back, if our country was attacked like Ukraine, who would be more likely to stay and fight, do you think? Democrats or Republicans? We've got a Quinnipiac poll that's going to tell you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Guys, a well-groomed appearance is the first thing people will notice about you after a stop at the best barbershop in Tampa Bay. Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin is that very place, and they've specialized in the art of men's haircutting for decades. They're located in the Overcash Plaza, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive. Andrew's Master Barbershop, open Tuesday through Saturday. Just call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
Hey, You new to the area or just want to know about the best hidden gems and upcoming events? Stay tuned. Be Local Buzz with Devin takes you to these places, introduces you to the best businesses, and tells you about upcoming buzz. Preset your radio to Tan Talk 1340 AM or 106.1 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. That is the Be Local Buzz with Devin on Tan Talk 1340 AM and 106 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. Looking forward to speaking with you.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
And we are back for the final segment of Freedom Works, and we thank you so much for joining us this morning. By the way, we are here live Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Tan Talk Radio Network. You can also listen to us on podcast. Ed puts all the shows there, bless his heart. So if you miss our show live or you want to hear it again, just go to OurFreedomWorks.com, O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com, and click on that podcast button. All right. So if Americans were in the same position as the Ukrainians right now, who would be more likely to stay and fight? Well, the Quinnipiac University poll came out, and of the Republicans surveyed, the poll said 68% would stay and fight. That's what they said they would do, compared to 40% of Democrats, 40%. Now, my question is this, Ed, where do the other 60% of Democrats go? Are they going to go to Canada?
Well, if they're the Generation X, as soon as the Wi-Fi goes down, they're out of here.
They're out of here?
They're out of here.
Okay. Yeah. I see. Among Democrats, 52% said they would flee the country. They would leave the country, compared to 25% of Republicans. 52% of the Democrats would
leave. I mean, where are you going to go? Where are you going to go?
I know. Yeah, that's the other thing. I guess they're going to go to Canada.
Well, if you're in Florida, it's a long walk.
Well, I guess you can go to Mexico. You know? Yeah. If you're in Florida, you could swim over to Mexico.
Jump on a boat, maybe. I don't know.
Would you go to Cuba? That's close.
Yeah. All the freedom they've got there.
Why exactly. Not? So while the hypothetical question was polarizing, obviously, between parties, the majority of Americans, 55%, said they would still stay and fight if they were in the same position as the Ukrainians are now. Only 38% total of those surveyed said they'd leave. Now, look at the Ukrainians and how they are defending their country.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to hand it to them. Mm. Those men and women, I have found newfound respect for them from what I have seen. I get the impression that they are very, 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 they are very, whatever the word is, attached.
Devoted.
And devoted. Yeah. Exactly right. All right. Before we get to our top 10, and by the way, we're going to tell everybody where to go for the gasoline that live around the station, Ed. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ed fell off his chair. You okay?
I dropped my phone.
Oh, he dropped his phone. Okay, well, he's going to look for it. In the meantime, so I pick up the whatever I picked up yesterday, and it says, Tom Brady has decided to come back to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I thought you and I talked about that. Did I not say I thought he might come back to you?
Yeah, well, it was a news flash everywhere. You know, he mentioned that 6 weeks ago he was done. And, you know, I think he had 6 weeks. You know, he traveled the,
that's
the
right.
world.
He got that out of his system.
Got that out. Probably came home, caught up on all the Netflix shows for about a week, and got everything there.
Did and some, now he's did, got nothing to do.
Did some of those crossword puzzles that had been piling up. And, you know, kids probably said, you probably said to kids, how about I make you breakfast? Oh, Mom makes it better. Well, what am I doing here? Why don't I just go back to work? So maybe that's what
you
it was.
You can only watch so many game shows and daytime talk
yeah,
shows.
All that money.
And
know,
he wants to get away from the kids anyway. And all that money. Yeah, with nothing to do.
I just wonder if maybe kids said, you know, hey, we want to watch you play one more year. Yeah.
What do you think? Are you happy that he did this?
Oh, how can you not be? I mean, jeez.
He's in
he was
good shape.
Top of his game when he left.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too.
You know?
Yeah.
It's not like he was on the way
and
out.
And he didn't win. If he had won the Super Bowl, If he played in the Super Bowl.
Our defense lost that game, by the way. You know? He's not, he's not Ben Roethlisberger of the Steelers, who needed to go.
Yeah.
I mean, it was done.
No, because we look at Tom Brady and go, there's nothing wrong with him.
Yeah.
You know, he's not limping and he's this and that. He seems to be in perfect shape for... How old is he again?
He'll be 45 this season.
Wow. Mm. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right. Thank you for the update.
Yeah, we got to do this gas thing because if we got a minute left, I got a business proposition for you.
All right.
For the gas.
Let's get to it. These are the top 10 gas stations near Tantalk Radio with the best gas prices. Here we go. Number 10. Three-way tie. Three-way tie. Sunoco and 7-Eleven at 3130 Gulf to Bay Boulevard. That's not that far. $4.29.
Okay.
In the meantime, the 7-Eleven on Drew Street, 1725 Drew, it's the same, $4.29.
Mm-hmm.
And the Chevron, this is also on Gulf to Bay, by the way, 3009 Gulf to Bay Boulevard, $4.29.
There you go.
All right, number six. 7-Eleven again at 1971 Sunset Point Boulevard, Sunset Point Road. I drive by it. Okay? I drive by it. $4.25. That's 4 cents less.
That's what I got.
Okay? You can see that. All right? Oh, well, you're reading your own. I have a tie, actually, with this.
Okay.
The Chevron at... Yeah. The other number six is the Chevron at 1801 Sunset Point Road. $4.25. Okay. Number five. Another Chevron at 2000 Drew Street, $4.21. Are we still on the same?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Number four. Circle K. This is at 1499 South Belcher Road, $4.19. $4.19. All right. We actually have a three-way tie for first, okay?
Okay.
So why don't you roll the drum? We have BJ's in Clearwater on Highway US 19. You know where that is?
Yes.
We got Sam's Club on Gulf to Bay Boulevard. You know where that is?
Yes.
And we got the Costco also on Gulf to Bay Boulevard. You know where that is?
And those are all club members because you pay a fee and then you get lower gas.
That is exactly correct.
Yeah.
Do you want to guess at how much the price is?
$4.08.
You are not guessing, but you are correct.
There you go.
It's $4.08. Now, did I tell you that I went and got gas at the 7-Eleven near me? And did I tell you this already? I had to fill my tank.
No.
You know how much I paid?
$80.
$75.
There you go.
$75.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, used to be $20 and something cents, and you were topping, you know, you full tank.
Mm-hmm.
Scary.
Yeah. So something I was thinking about real quickly on the electric cars. I know some of these people that are rich enough to drive them around town, and when they go home every night, charge them like their cell phone batteries. Here's the thing. If you and I need to drive in separate cars to Ohio, where you like to go, or Chicago.
Ohio.
Okay? You're going to have to stop an electric car every 300 miles to charge it for a couple hours, right?
That sounds right.
We need to build some service stations with something to do for 2 or 3 hours.
Does it take that long to charge
your
car?
Yeah. What do you do? Maybe bring your laundry?
Stuff
like, you know what I'm talking about? I'm thinking about that.
Yeah.
You know? Something that takes
you
2 days, you know,
to do.
Have board games and stuff like that in there, you know.
Nobody thinks about the fact that when you stop, it's not like stopping for gas.
Right.
It's not going to be 10 minutes. You're going to be 2 hours.
Yep.
Wow.
We got to go.
Okay. Bye for now.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
This is CBS News on the Hour, your home for original.